It's Tuesday, June 24th, and it's 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Welcome to the Daily Audio Stash. Great to have you here. Say, have you ever gotten ready for a long flight and seen all those micro brews and bars that are in the airport lounge and thought to yourself, wouldn't it be great if you could just smoke a bowl before you get on the flight? Well, the folks down in Denver with Safer have thought just that. In the wake of a bunch of air rage problems at the Denver airport, Mason DeVert of the Denver-based group Safer is doing a press conference probably right about now on the idea of putting in legal marijuana smoking lounges in the Denver airport. We'll be talking with Mason later on here in the podcast. Also, some more reefer madness to debunk, this time appearing in a newspaper in West Virginia. And we'll take a look at all the false accusations they give to marijuana with a surprising twist at the end that you might not expect. And today is Dr. Lester Grinspoon Day in the cannabis community. Dr. Grinspoon, of course, is the professor at Harvard and a longtime supporter of the medical uses of marijuana and the decriminalization of marijuana. Keith Stropp joins us from Normal in Washington, D.C. to talk about the life and legacy of Dr. Grinspoon and why we're celebrating today. And, of course, we're going to have a musical break today, but Cannabis Carry is off, so I'm going to dig into the archives for some marijuana music from the past, so enjoy that. All right, everybody, sit back, relax, and grab the four-footer. It's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Safer says fly high on the friendly skies. From MyFoxColorado.com. One pro-marijuana group is calling on the government to allow marijuana in smoking lounges at airports across the country. Cigarette smoking at Denver International Airport and other airports across the country is restricted to smoking lounges. Members of the Denver-based organization Safer Alternative for Enjoyable Recreation, or Safer, will ask the government Tuesday to allow pot in airport smoking lounges. The group says in a press release that the idea will address the growing number of in-flight problems involving drunk and disorderly passengers. Members claim marijuana is a better alternative to alcohol to help more flyers relax and deal with the anxiety of air travel. Denver voters approved a measure that made possession of 1 ounce or less of marijuana in the city legal. That happened almost 3 years ago. It was the first city in the nation to pass such a law. Possession of marijuana remains illegal under Colorado state law as well as federal law. Denver city attorneys can still use state and federal law to prosecute marijuana possession cases in the city. Would a marijuana smoking lounge at the airport help me be more comfortable cramming my supersized body into those gymnast-sized seats? Marijuana compound shows anti-inflammatory promise. From the NationalGeographic.com. A compound in marijuana may be a potent anti-inflammatory agent that won't get people high, scientists say. The finding could be a boon to sufferers of arthritis, cirrhosis, and other diseases. Existing drugs can be less effective for some people and can carry side effects from stomach ulcers to increased risk of heart attacks. Now researchers say that another cannabinoid, called beta-caryophyllene, or EBCP, helps combat inflammation without affecting the brain like THC does. EBCP is already part of many people's daily diets, the researchers note. Foods that are particularly high in the compound include black pepper, oregano, basil, lime, cinnamon, carrots, and celery. Essential oils from cannabis plants, whose leaves and flowers are used to make the marijuana drug, contain up to 35% EBCP. But even after decades of cannabis research, scientists hadn't previously known that the compound had anti-inflammatory properties. Cannabinoids in marijuana are known to primarily affect two of many molecular receptors in the human body. The CB1 receptor is found in the brain and central nervous system and is responsible for the high people experience when they smoke pot. The other receptor, called CB2, is found in tissues in the rest of the body and triggers a cascade of biochemical reactions that can help combat inflammation. The lead study author, Jörg Gertsch, of the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology, explained, quote, "Our interest is to exploit the pharmacological nature of the CB2 receptor because it does not have psychotropic side effects. Targeting the CB2 receptor could be a therapeutic strategy to prevent or treat diseases like Crohn's disease, inflammation of the intestinal tract, liver cirrhosis, osteoarthritis, and arteriosclerosis," end quote. THC activates both receptors, so it won't alleviate inflammation without also making people high. But EBCP affects only the CB2 receptor, according to the new study, which appears in today's issue of the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Well, studies like this are a double-edged sword. On the one hand, it is great to see more science being funneled into cannabis research, and I'm always thrilled to learn about the therapeutic wonders of nature's most perfect plant. But on the other, I worry about the medicalization of marijuana and how this research will lead to so many beneficial pharmaceuticals that lack a high that prohibitionists will have a rhetorical weapon to use in arguing for the end of medicinal plant marijuana. In other words, if we believe we have the right to get high, we cannot depend on medical marijuana to reinforce that belief, or they will just give us the medical marijuana without the high. Washington, D.C. enjoying capital hemp. From the Washington Post. Hemp. It's easier now to sample the culinary delights of the leafy green plant at D.C.'s new Capital Hemp. Owned by perennial Green Party candidate and D.C. statehood activist Adam Eidinger and his wife, fellow activist Alexis Bodden-Meyer, even the structure itself is made of hemp in the form of particle board. There are surprisingly stylish hemp clothes, hemp-related art, hemp shoes, and some adults-only products in a room out back. But forget the water pipes. Hemp is wholesome. It's the same species as marijuana, Cannabis sativa, but genetic differences mean it won't get you high. Up front in the family-friendly part of the store is the food. Hemp's touted as a great source of protein, essential fatty acids, iron, vitamin E, and dietary fiber, which of course makes one suspect that it probably tastes terrible. But it doesn't. Best of all, it's legal to cook and purchase hemp. It's just not legal in the U.S. to grow it. Why depends on who you ask. Eidinger says, quote, "Hemp has been misaligned with its cousin marijuana by lawmakers who have waged a cultural battle for years. Hemp has simply been unfairly caught up in the dragnet to ban marijuana. Because the U.S. is the biggest user of hemp products, we send our money to farmers in other countries," end quote. So we can't grow our own hemp, but we can eat what's here, which is mostly imported from Canada, China, and Europe. And what's here are hundreds of edible variations. Oil, nuts, flour, chocolate, milk, cheese, bagels, and more. We dig into a healthy sampling of hempy foods made with the various edible parts of the hemp. We start with homemade guacamole, which is simply regular guac with hemp nuts mixed in. Next is salad with hemp nuts and hemp dressing, 2 parts hemp oil to 3 parts vinegar. The nuts add a taste and texture not unlike pine nuts to the salad, and the dressing tastes like regular oil and vinegar. Hemp veggie burgers on hemp bagels with hemp mustard are the main course. The burgers themselves, made of hemp nuts and hemp oil, mixed in with green beans, onion, garlic, ground almonds, breadcrumbs, and eggs, fried in a pan full of coconut oil, are bright green and dense, and quite tasty when topped with hemp mustard. The hemp bagel is too heavy with such a thick patty. Bodenmeyer suggests using hemp bread instead. Finally, it's time for lemon hemparoons, lemon macaroons made with hemp seeds, and big glasses of chocolate hemp milk. The hemparoons are sweet, crunchy, lemony, and perfect. The hemp chocolate milk is cold and refreshing. We are quiet and contemplative. We eat a lot of hemp, says Bodenmeyer, but not usually this much in one meal. Man, it's making me hungry just thinking about it. Well, regardless of what anyone thinks about the wisdom of re-legalizing psychoactive cannabis, there isn't a single logical reason to outlaw non-psychoactive hemp. Does it strike anyone else as odd that the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration, bans the cultivation of industrial hemp, which is not a drug? Well, the technicality is that even industrial hemp may contain traces of THC, and THC is a controlled substance. But by the same token, mouthwash contains more than a trace of alcohol, yet kids can buy it at the supermarket. The micro amounts of THC in industrial hemp are never going to get you high. Industrial hemp is tall and reedy and very distinguishable from drug cannabis. You couldn't hide drug cannabis among industrial hemp plants because they would cross-pollinate and ruin each other. There is no public danger from industrial hemp for which the DEA needs to be protecting us.
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
Marijuana is dangerous, but maybe not the way you think. Yeah, a policeman or a drug dealer might shoot you over it. This bit of Reefer Madness is brought to you by Dr. Paul Savel, writing in the Sunday Gazette Mail of Charleston, West Virginia.
Inhaling the smoke of burning coal, wood, or leaves is bad for you. Acrid smoke injures the lungs and leads to chronic obstructive lung disease. Smoke contains chemicals such as benzopyrene, which causes cancer. Slow-burning cigarettes release carbon monoxide as well as carbon dioxide. The body senses a lack of oxygen in the blood and now increases the red blood count. The blood is now thicker and flows more slowly through narrowed arteries, increasing symptoms of angina and a leg artery disease called claudication. Marijuana smoke has the same effect as tobacco, lung disease, and cancer. The object of smoking it is to obtain the effect of the drug cannabis in marijuana, nicotine from tobacco, which is driven off by the heat of burning leaves.
Liar. Sorry to be rude about it, but that's a flat-out lie. While cannabis and tobacco both produce some of the same carcinogens, cannabis also produces THC, delta-9-tetrahydrocannabinol, and CBD, cannabidiol, which don't cause cancer and actually have antitumoral properties. Dr. Donald Tashkin thought the same thing as you and set out to prove it at the UCLA Medical Center. He found quite the opposite, that even long-term cannabis smoking, absent any tobacco smoking, didn't lead to lung cancer, and even some moderate users had less incidence of lung cancer than non-smokers. Marijuana smoking, heavy and long-term, can lead to some milder respiratory problems. Anyone concerned about those risks should switch to vaporization. Burning bud is way hotter than the point where THC vaporizes, so you get harmful smoke, and you waste a lot of the THC. Vaporizing bud happens at the temperature where THC turns to vapor, kind of a pot steam, if you will, which gives you almost all the THC and no harmful smoke.
There is now strong evidence that cannabis turns on a gene that codes for schizophrenia.
I'd like to see a citation for that, because to the best of my knowledge, nothing turns on genes like they were light switches.
Schizophrenia is the most devastating psychiatric disease, which comes on between puberty and age 40, usually under 30. If in a university of 30,000 individuals under 40, at least 2% might be genetically predisposed to develop schizophrenia, This would give 600 possible cases.
Hold on there. According to the National Institutes of Mental Health, 1.1% of Americans age 18 and over have schizophrenia. So now we're talking about 330 potential cases, not 600. Then we're assuming that these 330 potential schizophrenics all made it to university when most schizophrenics have had their first serious psychotic break by their senior year of high school. But let's say all 330 did make it to university. The government tells us less than 1 in 5 actually smoked marijuana last month, so now we've got 66 monthly pot-smoking schizophrenia-predisposed college students. Even so, people misunderstand the nature of schizophrenia. There are many factors, including family history of mental illness, that are better indicators of schizophrenic predisposition than cannabis use. And it's not as if schizophrenia is a fatal disease. It is highly treatable, and most schizophrenics can lead normal lives. We agree with the National Institutes of Mental Health when they say, quote,
"Do not use even small amounts of cannabis if you have any family history of mental illness, have had an episode of paranoid thinking or hearing voices, or had a bad response when first using cannabis or when using a small amount."
End quote. So how many of those 66 will voluntarily quit when they find out it's a bad experience for them? Plus, about half of schizophrenics get treatment, and their doctors will tell them to stop smoking cannabis.
Exposure to cannabis grew fourfold in the past 30 years. Also, selective breeding has provided more potent marijuana plants. Model projections suggest up to 1/4 of new cases of schizophrenia could be due to cannabis by 2010.
I don't know what that first sentence means. Marijuana has been easily available in the United States since the 1970s. A majority of young people consistently rank marijuana as either very easy or fairly easy to get. Marijuana plants have gotten more potent, though maybe only twice as potent, not the 15 or 200 times like you'll hear in the media, and more potent marijuana has always been around. But the whole cannabis schizophrenia question really boils down to, where's the bodies? The rate of schizophrenia in America has remained virtually unchanged at 1.1%, even as the use of cannabis increased in the 1960s and 1970s and declined in the 1980s and 1990s. It seems that 11 out of 1,000 people are schizophrenic, no matter what.
Cannabis increases body weight. When we eat food, we gradually feel full and stop eating. Not because the stomach is distended, but because food absorbed through the intestinal wall releases chemicals which reach the brain and attach to receptors so that the brain tells us to stop eating. Cannabis attaches to these brain receptors, blocking them from the intestinal chemicals. Since we do not feel full, we continue eating and get fat. This can be useful for someone with a wasting disease such as AIDS or tuberculosis, but not for most of us.
You talking to me? You talking to me? You talking to me? Well, then who the hell else are you talking to? Talking to me? Well, I'm the only one here.
Okay, guilty as charged. But nothing about cannabis stops you from being more active or taking on a better diet. I've got some skinny stoner, rock-climbing vegan friends who will smoke you under a table. And if you're going to tell me that marijuana is dangerous because it will make me fat, you better be writing your Big Macs are dangerous article next. And yet, given all this reefer madness, the writer comes up with the most sensible solution.
Marijuana is clearly dangerous. Should it be legalized? In the Framingham study reported in the New England Journal of Medicine, legal cigarette smoking decreased from 52% in the late 1970s to 15% in 2000. Illegal marijuana smoking has increased by 400% in the same period. Making marijuana legal may be considered cool to young males, but perhaps we should use similar methods to decrease use of marijuana as have been successful with tobacco. First, maintain a drumbeat of hostile information about it. Next, have the same restrictions on its use as for tobacco, and finally, tax it. The tax should start low and slowly increase in order to wipe out the drug dealers. Tax money should be used to fund decent asylums for the insane who cannot care for themselves.
Now that's a compromise I can live with. If you stop harassing, arresting, and jailing people for using, possessing, and growing marijuana, then you can say whatever you want about it.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 12 states today, and THCF has medical clinics in 6 of those states. Our physicians help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help them obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, Colorado, Nevada, Hawaii, and California. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at www.hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Well, today is June 24th, and we are celebrating one of the pioneers and one of the greats in cannabis law reform, and I'm joined by Keith Stropp, the legal counsel and founder of Normal, to help me with the discussion. Keith, welcome to the show.
Nice to be with you, Russ.
And, of course, we're talking about Dr. Lester Grinspoon, professor emeritus at Harvard University, and someone you've known for quite a long time. So for our younger listeners or those new to the cannabis reform movement that might not know of Dr. Grinspoon, what is his legacy and why are we celebrating today?
Dr. Grinspoon literally has been the intellectual godfather of this movement since as long as Normal has been around. I read his book, Marijuana Reconsidered, I believe it was in 1971 it came out, just the first few months after I had started Normal. I had also read a book by Professor John Kaplan called Marijuana, the New Prohibition about that time, and those two books had more impact on the direction I was headed than anything I've read before or since. Lester Grinspoon, it's hard to overestimate the impact he's had. He was a professor at the Harvard Medical School. He has the book Marijuana Reconsidered, which has been updated repeatedly and is, without question, I think, the most comprehensive treatise on why we should legalize marijuana in America that's ever been written, and it still today is a terribly powerful book. He had a son years ago who developed cancer and sadly died after a period of time, but during the time that he was undergoing his chemotherapy, someone whispered in Lester Grinspoon's ear that his son might benefit if he smoked marijuana before he took those chemotherapy treatments. And one of the experiences Lester talks about in a second book he wrote called at any event, what he writes about is how his son, who for a long time after he'd take his treatments, when he would go home, drive on the way home, he was so ill he would vomit out the window of the car. And the one time when the doctor agreed to let him bring a joint into the doctor's office and smoke it there before he did his chemotherapy, on the way home from the treatment, Lester's son actually asked his mother if they could stop for fast food. It was that dramatic.
Wow.
And so, needless to say, Lester developed a keen interest in the medical use of marijuana in addition to the recreational use, and ended up writing one of the leading books on the medical use of marijuana as well. So I would have to tell you, he served on the Normal Advisory Board all during the 70s. Then in the 80s, when the board had gotten into a difficult spot where they were sort of in a deadlock, the board actually asked Lester Grinspoon to step in and form a new board of directors. That was in the mid-90s when he did that. Lester is responsible for many of the prominent board members who are on our board today. People like Barbara Ehrenreich, the feminist author, and Andrean, Carl Sagan's widow, and lots and lots of other people, John Morgan and Lynn Zimmer. Lester is the best known expert on marijuana in the country today, and having him as a major player at Normal has been incredibly important. It's given us credibility that we simply would have never had without someone of Lester's standing.
Now, I think the book title you were looking for was Marijuana, the Forbidden Medicine.
That's right. I'm sorry. You can tell I'm getting old here. I can't remember the name of these books. That's right. Marijuana, the Forbidden Medicine, which he wrote with his colleague at Harvard Medical School. As I say, I consider Lester the intellectual leader of this movement. And in addition, he's never been afraid to get his hands dirty. He's gone to states all over the country to testify in favor of decriminalization bills and medical use bills. He's always available to write an op-ed piece if we need to get a piece published either supporting or opposing something in a state. Lester really is one of those intellectuals who's not afraid to get down and dirty and get his hand, develop a sweat and do some honest work. He's been a privilege and a pleasure to work with over these many years.
I think one of the ironic things about the career of Dr. Grinspoon is how he originally, when he was going to study marijuana and cannabis, he was believing it was going to be bad. He was trying to prove some of the reefer madness lies that were going around at the time.
Yeah, he simply, didn't know any better. When he first starts off, he's the first to concede that when he first started making plans for his marijuana book, it was intended to be a book that advised people to be careful, that this was a dangerous drug, and here were the reasons. But, of course, as he got into his research, what he discovered was that most of it was just government propaganda. Now, back then, Lester was, his interest was purely intellectual and academic. Over the years, frankly, as Lester would be pleased to advise you as well, he's become a regular marijuana smoker himself, and he thinks that it has improved his life as a result. So he's come a full 180 degrees from someone who was anti-marijuana all the way over to someone who believes that marijuana is one of those substances that can enrich your life.
Now, we've got a post up on the Normal main site at norml.org talking about Dr. Grinspoon. So there's plenty of links there you can click to learn more. And they're celebrating him here on the Louisville Late Night TV show. So if you're in the Louisville, Kentucky area, and looks like we've got a link here for Louisville Public Radio as well. So if you're in that area, you'll get to hear the interview with Dr. Grinspoon, I believe, live tonight. So if you get that chance. Dr. Grinspoon also maintains a couple of great web pages you should check out. Marijuana-uses.com and rxmarijuana.com. And Keith, it's been many, many years you've been working with Dr. Grinspoon, and on the off chance he gets to hear this interview, anything you'd like to say personally to him?
Well, I would tell you that I think he is the single most important advocate that we've had for legalizing marijuana in my lifetime. He's been that influential, without question. There's, lots of good people that we've worked with over the years who've been important to us, but no one has had the influence on the issue that Lester Grinspoon has. So I would simply say happy birthday to Lester, and when I get home tonight, I'm going to burn one and think about his fine contributions to moving us closer to our goal.
I think we can all do that. Happy Lester Grinspoon Day to everyone out there, and happy Lester Grinspoon Day to you, Keith.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Now it's time to play Pass the Stash, where you can win cool prizes from Normal.
All right, folks, time for our June Pass the Stash contest. Yeah, with only 1 week left to go, I know. I got a little busy. The prize this month is a copy of Steve Bloom's new book, Pot Culture, The A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life. And all you have to do to win is pass our special drug test. Now, don't worry, we don't want your pee. We just want your correct answer on the following three multiple choice questions. Question number one. Which of the following four stoner movies made the most money at the box office? Was it A, Half-Baked with Dave Chappelle? B, The Big Lebowski with Jeff Bridges as the dude? C, Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle, the first Harold and Kumar movie? Or D, Tenacious D in The Pick of Destiny with Jack Black? Question number two. How many people were arrested for simple marijuana possession in 2006? Is it A, about 1.9 million, B, about 830,000, C, about 740,000, or D, about 610,000? And question number three, according to the Institutes of Medicine, what percentage of cannabis users eventually become clinically dependent on cannabis? Is it A, about 31%, B, about 15%, C, about 9%, or D, it's a trick question because nobody becomes clinically dependent on marijuana? Send your answers along with your name to our email at stash@normal.org. You can remain anonymous if you wish, just say so. The first email to hit my inbox with all three correct answers wins the Pot Culture book. Remember, the three questions are, which of the following four stoner movies made the most money at the box office? How many people were arrested for simple marijuana possession in 2006? And according to the Institutes of Medicine, what percentage of cannabis users eventually become clinically dependent on cannabis? Check out our blog at stash.normal.org. You can see all the questions and the possible answers right there in the blog. And again, first email to make it to my inbox with all three correct answers wins the Pot Culture book. Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. All right, time for our musical break. And while Cannabis Carry has the day off, I'm going to bring you another new track from my favorite cannabis singer-songwriter, Chief Greenbud from Nashville, Tennessee. Today's song is I'm Gonna Get High, which I'm guessing is what the chief thinks as he's boarding that flight to Portland to appear at our Portland Hempstock Festival on the weekend after Labor Day. No, it's actually just another one of his fantastic parody songs, like his It's Only a Weed song that he wrote off the tune of Hey There Delilah. You gotta check that out. I've got a video of Chief Greenbud performing that on my cable access show in Portland with Oregon Normal. I got a YouTube video right there on our Stash page at stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get more of Chief Greenbud music, check out the Chief's MySpace page at myspace.com/CGB, like Chief Greenbud. This is Chief Greenbud, and the song is I'm Gonna Get High.
When you smell a skunk, you think stinky. When I smell it, I think, oh wow. 'Cause I remember the time when I smoked that kind and it knocked me right off of the couch. I don't mind spending $20 when I know it's a hell of a buy. I score a couple of grams. Hey, I've got a plan. I think I'm gonna get high. When you see an empty Coke bottle, I see a gravity bomb. I'll fill the kitchen sink up full of water. That first hit can be mighty strong. You better quit laughing as I'm holding it in. Can't you see that I'm fixing to die? I just bit my tongue and coughed up a lung. I think I'm gonna get high. I clearly see the world differently when I'm floating down from the sky. Just letting you know I'll be moving so slow, 'cause I think I'm gonna get high, high, high. Some people call me a stoner, a hippie and a dope smoking fiend, 'cause I sit around all day just trying to stay baked, writing songs and watching color TV. I spend all my time trying to find the next rhyme. I ain't got much, but I'm getting by. It's working in me we just don't agree. So I think I'm gonna get high. And I clearly see the world differently when I'm floating down from the sky. Just letting you know I'll be moving so slow, 'cause I think I'm gonna get high, high, high. I'm not very good with the paper. Don't make fun of the way that I roll. And if the joint looks like a snake swallowed a baby, well, I don't think that you wanna know. But thank you for sharing your expert opinion. Next time, why don't you keep it inside? It don't have to look good if it does what it should. Then I think I'm gonna get high. So watch me light up, 'cause I don't give a fuck. Oh, thank God. I'm gonna get high.
Hi, this is Alan St. Pierre, the Executive Director of Normal. We are the oldest, largest, and best-known marijuana law reform organization in America. And it's all because of your support. Take some time to join Normal at www.normal.org. Your membership supports this podcast, our websites, our policy research and analysis, and our annual conferences. Changing marijuana laws is a grassroots effort, and it starts with you, the stakeholder. Join Normal today and add your voice to the millions of cannabis consumers who demand equality with our beer-drinking friends.
One of the places in America where we're seeing a lot of great cannabis activism is Colorado, and specifically Denver, Colorado, where residents there have voted to make marijuana legal for all intents and purposes. And we're here with the man who got that effort started, Mason DeVert of Denver, Colorado. And Mason, welcome back to the Daily Audio Stash.
Thanks so much for having me.
So I got up this morning and I'm looking through the news to see what stories I'd comment on today. And I saw this one about the Denver airport and how Safer is calling for marijuana smoking lounges in the airport. And I got to say, bravo, kudos, and an idea long past its time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it makes absolutely no sense that we allow adults to consume vast amounts of alcohol prior to boarding flights and even on flights. And it's leading to so many problems, and even more so now than ever before, with people getting belligerent and causing problems while in the air. And it just makes no sense to not allow adults to have that alternative, to simply use marijuana to deal with their pre-flight anxiety and to relax instead.
Have there been any cases in the news recently involving the Denver airport with these cases of air rage?
Yeah, there's been a few, and that's why it's we really decided to start this conversation. At the end of last year, we saw an incident in which a woman got drunk and actually abused her children on a flight and then abused a flight attendant. We saw one in which a man was inappropriately touching a flight attendant and started a fight and tried to choke another passenger. Both of those flights were diverted to Denver. And then just about a week ago, there was another flight in which a woman became incredibly drunk and belligerent, and they had to divert that flight to Denver, and she appeared in federal court yesterday, which led to the U.S. attorney here in Colorado saying, you know, something's got to be done about this, and they're going to start cracking down. And we think this is a great way for them to address this.
Well, you know, a lot of people are using the alcohol to calm the nerves of having to get on a flight. A lot of people have a lot of anxiety when it comes to flying. And of course, when you go into any airport in America, you're going to find all sorts of pubs around the concourse area where people can get loaded before they get on the flight, or even, like you say, on the flights, be able to order spirits and wine and such. Now, is Denver also one of those airports that has the tobacco smoking areas?
Yeah, absolutely. Denver has smoking lounges, and that's what makes this so easy. You know, reporters keep asking, well, is this even possible? And I say, you know, that's not really the right question to be asking. Of course it's possible. We have tobacco smoking lounges.
just let people use marijuana in them. The real question is, why wouldn't we want to allow people to use marijuana in them? And I've yet to get a good answer on that.
Now, of course, the legal situation might be something to bring up. Denver has a special situation. Remind our listeners a little bit about what your laws are now as passed by the voters in Denver.
Sure. As a result of the initiative passed in 2005, we amended our city ordinances to make adult marijuana possession legal under all circumstances. Unfortunately, the city chose to continue enforcing state law needlessly. We've been fighting with them over that for some time, and that came to a head with another initiative being passed this last year in 2007, in which voters officially designated adult marijuana possession the city's lowest law enforcement priority. And the city has actually started to really pay attention to that. In fact, they announced just recently they're no longer going to require a court appearance. They're making it just a ticket that you send in. And while that's certainly a step forward, it's not our goal here, but it is a step in the right direction.
But when we're talking about an airport, like your Denver airport there, what is the jurisdiction as far as the city goes versus, say, transit authorities, Denver, the county or state, or even, you know, we're talking Federal Aviation Administration, too.
Sure. Well, you know, the city of Denver basically runs the airport to a large extent. You know, our tax dollars here in the city do go to that airport. There are Denver police in that airport. It does make a lot of the decisions. Now, obviously, the FAA is involved, but this really has not a lot to do with the actual flying of planes. Obviously, this is not meant for pilots. It's meant for passengers. And, you know, if the FAA has no problem with passengers using alcohol prior to boarding a flight or even on a flight, there's really no justifiable reason why they'd have a problem with someone simply using a less harmful drug.
And that's, I think, what we need to keep emphasizing here is that, you know, we're already letting people get loaded on drugs. We just call it alcohol.
That's exactly right. And that's what really this is meant to do, is to get people to start thinking about this. And, you know, the fact that this seems so unreasonable to many people is just a sign of how brainwashed we've become into accepting that alcohol is just part of our society and that marijuana needs to be illegal. Shouldn't be the case. It doesn't need to be the case. And we're hoping that this gets some people thinking.
Right. You know, I think a lot of people, now you're getting ready to do a press conference, I believe, in about an hour and a half. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. So a lot of people are going to hear this press conference, and I think on first blush, they're going to go, well, that's ridiculous. You know, people smoking marijuana in an airport, that's ridiculous. But it brings the subject up, and it makes people have to say, why? Why is that ridiculous? I think it's a great marketing campaign. I love the way that you're kind of pushing the envelope on this and forcing the conversation to happen here. So for the rest of our listeners out there, how can they get involved with you guys and help to help SAFER continue on with these campaigns?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for asking. They can go to saferchoice.org. That's our website. Sign up to receive alerts and updates on what's going on. We oftentimes ask our supporters to contact officials and let them know how they feel on this. So in a case such as this, you know, maybe down the line we will start a letter-writing campaign to officials with the FAA or with the city of Denver. Who knows? So we certainly encourage them to get in touch.
The other thing I'd like to do here just to close things up is we're talking to people all around the country in the summertime. You know, a lot of the festivals are happening, and this is the chance for people to get out and actually meet the movers and shakers in the in cannabis law reform. This is how I got involved, is going to a summer festival and meeting people. So in the Denver Intermountain area there, are there going to be some events where SAFER will be tabling where they could possibly meet you guys and get more involved that way?
Well, we'll actually be up at HempFest that's coming up here August 16th and 17th in Seattle. And we oftentimes have people distributing literature and signing up new supporters at events all over the country. What's great about our organization is that it's very decentralized. We have people that print flyers online or ask us to send them some, and they just do what they can wherever they can, and hopefully folks will run into those people. And if they want to be one of those people, they should get in touch.
SAFER Alternatives for Enjoyable Recreation. You can check them out at saferchoice.org. And Mason Tevert, thank you for joining us again on the Daily Audio Stash.
Thank you, Russ.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. and web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org, and you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with a cannabis quote from Dr. Lester Grinspoon, MD, who said, quote, "Cannabis is remarkably safe. Although not harmless, it is surely less toxic than most of the conventional medicines it could replace, if it were legally available. Despite its use by millions of people over thousands of years, cannabis has never caused an overdose death," end quote. And another quote that I really like from Dr. Grinspoon, quote, "We in this country have to make up our minds. We cannot have it both ways. We cannot be both drug-free and free," end quote. Happy birthday, Dr. Grinspoon, from all of us here at Normal. We appreciate all of the work that you've done over these past four decades in cannabis reform. I'm Radical Russ. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in, and we'll have more Daily Audio Stash for you tomorrow. And until that time, take care of each other, tokers.